I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Hey, it's Jordan, and I've got a podcast for you. Commons is Canada's most popular podcast about politics. Last season, they tried to answer the question, how corrupt is Canada? This time around, they're investigating our national addiction, oil. The current season featuring host Archie Mann is called Crude, and it's about Canada's relationship with the oil industry. The good, the bad, the ugly, and the weird. You'll find Commons wherever you get your podcasts, so go check it out. I'm going to try to tell you today's story, the way I'll probably tell it to grandkids someday. There was this guy, a golfer, named Tiger. He was the best golfer in the world, probably ever. You could argue if you wanted to, but nobody who'd watched him play would listen to you. And if that was our story, it would be a boring one. But it's not. Anyway, Tiger was the greatest. He had it all, the fame, money, commercials, endorsements, beautiful wife, and adorable children. But he was also a jerk. There were a lot of stories about this. He was rude to fans. He wouldn't give kids high fives or sign autographs. He had his caddy yell at people. He was a notoriously bad tipper. He was a sullen guy to play with. He was robotic with the media. And none of those things mattered because he was the greatest until he wasn't.
Just after 2 on Friday morning, 33-year-old Tiger Woods drove out of his house alone. His car first hit a fire hydrant, then a tree. Police say
after that crash, his wife left him. It turned out he'd been cheating on her with dozens of women across the country. His sponsors dropped him almost as fast as she did. Then details of his affairs came out and they were humiliating.
I want to say to each of you, simply and directly, I am deeply sorry for my irresponsible and selfish behavior I engaged in.
His knee gave out, and then his back, and even when he felt good enough to play golf, he was bad at it. And then despite surgeries, his back got worse and worse until he could barely sit down without pain. He needed a spinal fusion surgery. He had it just so he would be able to play with his children in his old age, he said. But afterwards, he felt better. So about 2 years ago, he picked up a club and tried to play again. And he could. And he started getting better at it. And the rest, well, we'll tell you the rest, but you probably know how this ends.
Many doubted we'd ever see it. But here it is. The return to glory.
So is Tiger Woods now redeemed? What is it about him that compels so many of us to root for him despite his flaws? What does the way we cheer for Tiger tell us about the kind of stories that we're drawn to and about the kind of heroes we prefer? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Stephen Brunt from Sportsnet is one of our favorite guests to talk to whenever sports gets bigger than the games on the field. Why did everybody I know, even legitimately people on my production team who don't care about sports, watch golf on Sunday?
Well, let's see. Because the greatest golfer of all time came back under what seemed like impossible circumstances and rose right to the top of the sport, you know, after being written off for really good reasons over the last several years, especially over the last 5 or 6 years. Because Tiger Woods is a groundbreaking figure culturally, that people who don't know the wouldn't know Jordan Spieth if he walked up their driveway, know who he is. That he is an icon and a groundbreaker. So he has significance beyond the game he plays. And because we all love a good redemption story, whether it's true or not, we all want to believe that if you turn your life around, if you do the right things instead of the wrong things, if you follow the rules, you will be rewarded somehow in the cosmic sense. And for a lot of people, I think that's what it felt like. I'm not sure it's the greatest. I was trying to think, is this the greatest comeback story in sports history? That's a big one, right? And I have a personal bias on that because I saw George Foreman win the heavyweight championship at age 46. having been away for 11 years and then come back as a big fat guy and had people laugh at him and lose 9 rounds of a fight and knock a guy out in the 10th. So that was pretty good. But that probably is just me. But otherwise, yeah, maybe potentially the greatest comeback story in the history of sport. A nostalgia moment for some people. I get creeped out thinking of 90s nostalgia. Somebody my age, that doesn't 90s is like yesterday. But it's a nostalgia moment. You know, that's kind of the big three right there, right? So within the sport, historical, greatest of all time, and the redemption narrative, and nostalgia for a certain generation who remember when way, way back in those 1990s.
Tell me about that, because that was something that everybody was talking about right after he won, is that moment 20-something years ago now when the world saw Tiger Woods for the first time. Do you remember the first time you saw Tiger Woods?
That's a good question. I know, not specifically. I certainly remember the first Masters. I remember talking about him in the U.S. Amateur. I remember him being, you know what? I know. I take that back. You know when I saw him the first time? I was at home as a teenager, a young teenager, maybe not even a teenager yet. And after school, my parents watched the Mike Douglas Show, which was a talk show that was on every day at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And that's the famous show where his old man brought him out as a 6-year-old and he hit golf balls. Hmm. I saw that show.
Do you remember when Tiger Woods became, I guess, the Tiger Woods that we talk about when we talk about the beginning of this story?
You know, when is, you know, lapping the field at the Masters? I'm like one of those moments when he just did something that, when he seemed on another planet, when he seemed different from all of the rest, when he separated himself. And that puts him on a very short list with Jordan and Ali. And
what was it like watching him in the late 90s and early 2000s?
Well, okay, so I'm not a golf guy. I have to acknowledge this first, right? Like, I quit playing golf when I was 14. I walked off the course on the second hole. I hated it. I hated the people. I hated the clothing. I hated everything. So I just left. I literally just walked off in the middle of a game.
And that's why we're talking to you, because this story is not about golf.
So I hate golf and everything about it. But no, he was a Superman, right? He was this, and you know, and again, the non-traditional nature in terms of golf, the whitest of sports.
Yeah.
In those days, more so than now, but the idea that you could be, you know, someone other than a rich white kid and take on this sport. Sort of the way they're with the Williams sisters in tennis, the same vibe, mm-hmm. that you could kind of just kind of throw all of that back in people's faces, play on courses that were segregated up and, you know, within my lifetime.
Yeah, there were courses that I remember. Do you remember the commercial, I think, that Nike did about that he was the first black person to ever play on some of these courses that he'd been playing on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do remember that. And that was, you know, again, that's a very, so you felt like this was righteous too, that he was kicking down those doors and breaking those barriers and thumbing his nose at the racist and the racist traditions in golf. It's, you know, a total package. You know, now that said, the other side of him was completely unknowable. You know, we saw him. He was, again, a public figure, and he's a 6-year-old to a degree. And he was, you know, as kind of a brand icon, he was like Jordan. He was mm-hmm. universal, right? You could show that picture in any continent on earth and people say, oh, that's him. But he was impenetrable. He still is. I have no idea who that guy is. I really don't. You know, there's a lot of people have tried to figure it out, and a lot of, you know, very fine writers have taken a crack at it, but I have no idea what's inside him.
Do you think we know him better now than we did 10, 12 years ago?
I think we would like to think we do. Again, I think pretending that we know these people is important to us because it gives meaning to something that's otherwise meaningless, which, again, I just about put myself out of a job here, but you know, like it doesn't really matter, this stuff, right? It doesn't. It's funny. You know, like putting a little white ball in the hole or scoring a touchdown or scoring a winning goal in overtime in a hockey game doesn't add up to a whole lot. You know, it doesn't even add up to what, you know, it doesn't add up to what art adds up to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with art, you can say the art is what's important. So we will forgive people when, number one, you don't need to know the personality of the person producing the art. You can appreciate the art as a separate thing from them. And number two, you forgive them their sins, right? It doesn't matter. Like Miles Davis, horrible person, right? Like one of the worst people ever, but produced sublime, transcendent, revolutionary art. And that's enough. You don't have to care about him. But
with
sports,
an athlete.
Well, see, that's the thing. It's different because this, you know, no one's, I know it's, you can argue, make the argument that it's art, but you know, games come and go, scores come and go. Somebody wins, somebody loses. I've been writing about this stuff for a long time. It doesn't add up to a hill of beans. But if we can give it meaning, you know, if you can kind of imbue it with meaning and say there's a human lesson here and there's a human involved in this, then I think it kind of justifies it. So I think that's part of we want to turn this into a parable. We want to turn sports into a parable. That's how we understand the world, is, you know, through parables.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
As someone who tries to turn sports into those lessons for us, what did you think when Tiger's fall started, when the news broke of the car crash and the details of that came out and he stepped away?
I felt like he had feet of clay like the rest of us, you know, that it was interesting because it was kind of a flash of humanity in there. He had been so packaged and so protected and so manufactured and, you know, both as a player, you know, by his father and then certainly by Nike and everybody else who were in the image business, the image management business. You know, to be around Tiger, you know, I was a couple of times at golf tournaments, and, you know, there was no sense of what was behind this thing. And so, you know, I think that there is, well, it's what the gossip industry is built on, right? That kind of the vicarious thrill of, oh, they're like us, aren't they? They're just like us.
Yeah, there's a real human under the Nike hat.
Yeah, but especially and a flawed human, right? So, yeah, he may be rich and he may be handsome and he may have this beautiful wife and but really he's like, you know, the bad guy down the block. You know, not like you because you would never acknowledge that. He's like the bad guy down the block. He has flaws. He's human. And so, I think there is a little bit of, you know, glee that goes with that sometimes. Kind of, you know, the whole Schadenfreude thing, right? That you're I think a lot of people kind of were excited about it, you know, in some ways and said, there you go. You know, you may have thought you were something else, but here's what you really are. But I think what it mostly revealed was a guy who, I wouldn't try and put a framework on it and say he was, you know, all about golf and then, you know, never developed the other dimensions of his humanity. I have no idea. Like, I don't know who the guy is. I don't pretend. But I think the impulse there is to say, yeah, he is a flawed human being like the rest of us. And again, weirdly, to take some satisfaction from it.
Well, there is that narrative that we probably like to put on sports stars because they're bigger and faster and better and richer than us, that they are missing out on an essential part of humanity because they had to focus on this game since they were 3 years old and they missed the whole rich tapestry of life that we got.
Yes. No, and that's a great point, right? That is a great point. That, you know, those character lessons you learn by being a really crappy little league player,
yeah,
right, for instance.
Or, I know how to sit on a bench,
or Steven. Or being dumped by, you know, various girlfriends or ignored by others or, yeah, just understanding failure that these guys believed they were impervious to it. But in fact, you know, everybody gets their comeuppance at some point. But again, that's kind of a religious theme, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah. Well, it's the nadir of the human experience, mm-hmm. right? And that we all kind of go through the worst valleys in our lives. And it's what comes after that makes it worthwhile, theoretically.
Theoretically. Yeah, theoretically. Or, you know, it could be just all pointless, which would be another kind of more bleak way to look at it.
Well, how unlikely was the next peak after that valley? Because it wasn't just the personal life scandal. It was like, I mean, you cover lots of athletes who try to come back from stuff. If I asked you 5 years ago, Stephen, what's the chance that I see Tiger Woods win another green jacket?
You know, slim. 2 years ago, right? Look, it's not about the personal life stuff in this sense because, look, he was quite capable of winning golf tournaments while his personal life was apparently, you know, rather chaotic. He managed to keep those two things separate. It's when it was the physical stuff. It's when his back went. You know, this is a guy who, you know, could barely, bend over to pick something up off the floor 2 years ago. You know, the back, you can't swing a golf club with that. You know, and I think physically that idea that no matter how hard he worked, his body had broken.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in a way that it did not appear to be fixable. So he could try as hard as he wanted to and he could live as clean a life as he wanted to and all of those things, but it didn't matter because this machine was broken. So I don't think anybody hearing those stories from 2016, 2017 about his back, the kind of whispers, because it wasn't very public, thought, you know, there's no chance, right? He can't go out there and compete week in and week out.
And then he kind of comes back, I guess about a little over a year ago now. And starts playing golf, mm-hmm. playing all right. And even then, I don't know about you, but it was like watching an older athlete play out his years with some semblance of what he used to be, but not the same person.
Although there were a couple of moments, right? Like, certainly in the British Open, right, in the mm-hmm. Open Championship, right, where you kind of thought, you know, he's not that far off. And it's not like, but it's a different, you're right, it's a different vibe. It was a different vibe in the, at the Masters. Because, you know, the old vibe is the, you know, I'm going to destroy you. I'm going to destroy the golf course, which is what it really is. Yeah. But I'm going to destroy the rest of you in this tournament. And that kind of uber confidence that he had. I thought the most interesting thing watching that last round was watching him play the 18th hole so carefully. So yeah. Super carefully, right? Because, you know, again, it would have been just insane to go up there and hit a driver at that point, you know, because God knows. But just kind of watching him play a really safe bogey to win that tournament, that's not, in some ways, that's the anti-Tiger, right? It's just, but it was smart. It was the right thing to do. And really, the way he won that, you know, the way he triumphed in that last round was by being kind of dogged and watching and consistent and then watching other people fail around him. It wasn't like he just seized them by the throat. They had to fail. So that's a little different.
If we're going to do the metaphor thing again, he humbled himself in front of the 18th hole.
Mm-hmm.
And is that, can we read into that anything about his new life? I mean, a lot of people talked even before this tournament about how he just wanted to win for his children, right? And he wanted his kids to see daddy win. And that's not the old Tiger.
Yeah. And who knows if that, like, who knows this guy intimately right. enough to actually say that? I have no idea. I think he probably likes being Tiger.
Yeah.
And I thought the chance to be Tiger one more time at 43, that'd be pretty cool. Right. That'd be like, and yes, it'd be great to have it, do it in front of your children who'd never really got to experience it and to, you know, shove it up the nose of everybody who ever said anything about you. There'd be a lot of things that you would take satisfaction from. But you know, again, this is a guy who is programmed to be that thing, that character, that kind of golf playing robot from the time he was a toddler. And, you know, to have that, it's interesting. Ray Thompson's got a new book out about kind of greatest, the nature of some of the greatest of all time athletes. It's him and it's Jordan and I remember who the other two are. But his, you know, his take on Tiger, you know, is among his takes on Tiger, and you know, he's a great writer of golf and a great guy who's been around the sport, is, you know, that he thinks Tiger hated the sport. That whole first phase, that he was incredibly good at it and hated every minute of it because it had been forced and imposed upon him. So, you know, again, if I'm going to play amateur shrink here, I could talk about him being liberated in this second half and doing it for himself and for his own reasons rather than someone else's reasons and not having the daddy figure hovering over him and being the daddy himself. And but like now I'm being a sports writer here, right?
Yeah,
I'm just
extrapolating. I saw that column come into view.
Yeah. I just don't know if it's true, right? I honestly don't. I have no idea. I have no idea, you know, what lies in his soul, but I don't have any idea what lies in most people's souls, right? But we go seeking it. We go seeking that story.
Yeah, we're trying to find the meaning.
Yeah, and then tomorrow we'll try and find the meaning in something else. But this one, look, the one thing I will say as a sports writers, people always ask, who, you know, do you cheer? We cheer for stories.
Yeah.
I've been in lots of press boxes, lots of press rooms. Everybody cheers for the story. Everybody got what they were cheering for. And, you know, and for a fan too, that really that's what fans want. You know, you want to, yeah, you support your team and you support the uniform, but man, there's nothing like a story, is there?
Well, here's the question then. How come I was, and probably you were, and certainly millions and millions of people were cheering so hard for a guy who, objectively, from the little that we do know about him, isn't that great a guy, mm-hmm. or at least hasn't been, and cheering for him as a huge underdog when, objectively, he's won more majors than anybody but one person, and he's won hundreds of millions of dollars?
Because we're flexible. We as a species are very flexible.
I want to feel like we cheer for a real underdog.
Yeah, but we can, you know, you can turn. It's, you know, think about watching the March Madness if you have no real rooting interest. And so there's two schools on there. You have no idea who they are. You have no idea who those players are. But you can construct something around that game where when, you know, East-West North Dakota State, you know, beats somebody, you go, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen. You're rooting for them when that basket goes in. You know, and then you go on to the next thing. We do construct stuff like that. And, you know, he's like that. The idea of the fight back, that's really, you know, fight back from adversity, fight back against the impossible. And the character stuff, as I said, it's tricky. Because sport has been a place where we've confused being good at something, having great motor skills or winning the genetic lottery or, you know, working hard or all this stuff. But everybody works hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we do confuse that with character sometimes. Those things are blurred, right? That, you know, that he's a character guy. You know, that's why he succeeded, not because, you know, he was born this way or had some advantages, or it's because there's something else inside. We got to, you know, again, we go for that a lot of time. And the flip side of it is we're quite willing to ignore the opposite, where somebody could be like, Michael Jordan's not a nice guy, right? There's not really any suggestion that Michael Jordan's a nice guy.
No, there's, like with Tiger, there's plenty of stories to the contrary.
Yeah, and, you know, Ali was a terrible husband and a crappy father by and large. Now, there's also a political, social component to Ali, so that's, you know, it's a little bit different. But as I was saying before about, you know, the separating the art from the artist, you can do that with art. You know, Pablo Picasso is a bad guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Really bad guy, but it didn't stop anyone from treating him as Picasso or treating his work that way.
Well, you don't have to cheer for Picasso.
No, you don't. And you can see it, you know, it gets tricky with the, you know, the Woody Allens of the world. You know, it gets into some dicier territory there. Maybe, I'm not sure anybody's going to, you know, listen to a Bill Cosby monologue the same way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But sport, the two things are connected. The two things are connected. And we like to, you know, we want to kind of link those two things and say, this guy triumphed or this woman triumphed because, A, yes, they were very talented, but because they worked harder, because they had more of that grit and character and, you know, royal jelly. We really seek that. And, like, I'm not saying it's not true.
Yeah.
But I think it's more that we need it to be true or we want it to be true sometimes.
Like, it's a chicken or the egg. Did Tiger win again because he became a better person? Or because he's winning again, do we just think he became a better person?
Bingo. Yeah. And his back got better.
Yeah. And well, that too. Yeah. He actually could swing a golf club again.
Yeah. Like, he may be a great guy now and totally, you know, St. Paul on the road to Damascus had a moment where, hang on, everything's clear now, and I'm not going to do all those terrible things anymore. Or, you know, maybe just got healthy. I don't know. We'll never know. But the former is way more compelling than the latter.
Thanks, Stephen.
My pleasure.
Stephen Brunn from Sportsnet hates golf but loves narrative. That was The Big Story. For more from us, you can find us at thebigstorypodcast.ca or at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. We are also up in your social media at Frequency Pods on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Instagram. And you can always reach us at TheBigStoryFPN on Twitter. As well, we are in your favorite podcast app, no matter which one it is, and we'd love a rating or a review. Leave us comments. We love comments. Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, you pick, we're there. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.